Hi, I'm Circe Westner, the director of the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeros, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Schooling with Uncle Sam. I'm speaking today with Kim Metters, who is a Dodds brat and a Navy veteran and a really good friend of mine. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Circe.
Hey, you know, I consider you a really good friend. We have a high school in common, but I didn't really know you until I was an adult and we met at one of the brat reunions somewhere. I was friends with your younger brother, Eric, who was a grade ahead of me at Karlsruhe American High School. But through the magic of social media and now Zoom, you and I are always talking, collaborating in and out of each other's lives. And so I wanted to welcome you to the show today and to say that I know many of our listeners will recall reading one or two of your stories that you post on some of the Brat Facebook groups, or maybe they've written, well, read one of your many books you've written. And I know they're going to be excited about the show today. So by Zoom, thousands of miles away, Kim, I want you to tell me a little bit about your growing up years. You know, give us your brat history in a nutshell.
Well, it started in 1957 when my dad got a job with what is now Dodds. Back in those days, not sure what it was called. We were stationed at a little place in Kitzingen, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of an interesting trip. And I was only 3 years old when we started it, but I have some very vivid memories of travel to Germany, having to travel from California to New York by train, and then catching a ship, the USS Randall, to Bremerhaven, which was a two-week voyage. And then my dad didn't meet us in Bremerhaven, Germany, so my mom had to negotiate a military train to Kitzingen, where we finally met up with him.
Wow.
I don't remember why my dad didn't make it, but back in those days, you know, the Army and the, I guess, Dodds, the attitude was if we wanted you to have a wife and kids with the issue you want. So,
that was definitely the military sentiment for sure. So just very quickly list the places, you know, that you've lived as a Dodds brat.
Sure. After Kitzingen, we went back to the States for a year. My dad and mom had decided that had been their big adventure in life. But when they got back to the States, they said, you know, we missed being in Europe. So it signed up again a year later and ended up in Karlsruhe for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Then we stayed there for 2 years, and then we moved to Hohenfels, Germany, Ethiopia, and Asmara, Ethiopia, which is now Eritrea.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to the state for another year, then went to France. On the Riviera, of all places,
the
Air Force Base in Holland, and then back to Karlsruhe. And we stayed there for another 3 years. Then Dad had to move to Stuttgart. They moved the superintendent's office there. And we did 2 years in Stuttgart where I graduated. Then my family moved back to Karlsruhe for the rest of my dad's career.
That probably explains why I know Eric, but I didn't know you, because I knew him in his late years in Karlsruhe High School. Ha. Huh. Okay.
Yeah, I was long graduated before you were.
The young whippersnapper. So, which was your favorite place to live and why?
I would say. Ethiopia was one of the favorite places, just because of the adventure of the place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I really like Karlsruhe a lot, and I consider Karlsruhe like my second hometown. down, you know?
You know, I know that you mentioned somewhere you weren't that enamored with living in France. I mean, you were on the Riviera. Why is that?
I mean, well, it was a period of history which, it's kind of hard to describe. France had been in Vietnam during the, you know, for their time, and we were in Vietnam, and that was part of it. And then in 1966, the Gaulle kicked the Americans out of France, and all this was all kind of building up to the head when we lived there. And I don't know why the French people are this way, but they seem to be, they pick on easy targets like the little American boy wandering the streets of Boulogne-sur-Mer or Nice, I don't know. It just seemed like I got picked on a lot, France, by the French. not because I knew anything about my country's politics, but I was just the kind of a ready target. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, so you and I are both Dodds brats. And you guys moved a lot more than my family did. Did you like that mobile lifestyle?
Not particularly. The reason we moved a lot early on after our first time in Karlsruhe was my dad was trying to get into the administration. He was a teacher and they were grooming him for administration, so we moved to Hohenfels so he could try it out as the teacher principal. And then we moved to Ethiopia because that was where my mom could work. My mom and dad could work together. She could, as a principal, she couldn't work for him because he was, you know, nepotism and all.
Right.
And they needed earn some money so he could take a year off and get his master's degree and administration credential. So we moved back to, San Jose, and he got his degree, and then moved to France, and then we got kicked out of France and moved to Holland, and that's when he came to the attention of Dr. Mason, and they put him into the then Eudesia track. So for a period of about 5 years, it was 1 year at one point, and then when he finally got settled into the administrative track, it was more
stable.
Stable, right?
Yeah. Well, you sound like a military brat there. Speaking of military brats, I always hear my military brat friends say that they had to toe the line because they represented the military, the U.S., their family, you name it. They had to be an example or else, right? Since your parents were both educators, I have to ask this. Did your parents expect you to be a better student or to behave better than your peers?
I think they wanted me to be, but I was kind of a stubborn child, and the problem was, I went to school in the same school that my mom and dad either taught or was principal at, so, you want to be that goody-goody kid, so I was often a very poor student or, one that got into trouble, so, I'd be more of a regular kid. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no. I recently... And,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I recently found a bunch of my old report cards. You know, my mom and dad were both teachers and administrators too. So I recently found some of my old report cards and I was reading my teacher's comments. And a recurring theme for me was, Circe talks too much. Circe is disorganized. And my personal favorite was, Circe is too confident. So what recurring themes, I think you're alluding to them, were in your report cards? I mean, they didn't say Kim is a stubborn kid, did they?
Well, some of them said that. I think there was maybe a suspicion I needed to go into special ed or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I had the very similar comment. But, you know, that kind of all changed when my dad got out of the school when I didn't have that contact anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So right around the ninth grade, everything changed. And I started getting great grades and, doing my homework. And I wanted to play sports. That was part of it, you know. And, right around ninth grade, it all changed around for me.
Well, speaking of ninth grade, I know, like me, you went on to be a teacher later on in life, but thinking back to ninth grade, did you ever think you'd grow up to be a teacher?
Absolutely not. I probably would be worried if I graduated from high school in ninth grade, you know, but if anything, I think I was leaning more towards military
at that point. So why did you decide to become a teacher? And I guess, was there a specific educator or educator who later on when you were making that career choice that you realized had inspired you?
I had a couple teachers that were really great to me. I had one lady at Karlsruhe. She was the librarian there that really kind of inspired me to start reading, which I never really enjoyed that much, but that was one person. And as far as, you know, as a choice to become a teacher, I assumed it was, you know, basically the family business, you know, and both my parents were very encouraging in that respect that I get into education. So, anyway.
You know, that sounds like me, though, because I also never intended to be a teacher. Never, never, never. And then one day I was already graduated from college and I thought about it and I was like, you know, I think I would be good at it. So it was in my DNA. So I understand. Hey, so I know you were in the Navy. When did you join and how long did you serve?
Well, I did a year of college in Los Angeles right after I graduated from high school. And I was really hating it, you know. So I one day just up and joined the Navy. And I did 4 years active duty, and then I got out of the Navy, and after 4 years of active duty in the Navy, college didn't look like such a bad thing after all.
Yeah.
it actually helped me quite a bit. It helped me focus and be better prepared for school, and I treated school more like a job than, the lark that I had before. The Navy was good in that respect, and I did another 20 years in the reserve, so I did a total of 24 years.
Wow. So in reading some of your Navy stories, I can see them being made into a TV or movie comedy, because you're a very good writer and you write some really funny things. You definitely have a way with words. But your 2013 blog post about the Seven Seas Locker Club, which we've got posted on our museum blog, is our most popular post, even since 2013. And it has over 140 comments. And at least once or twice a month, I am moderating another comment because people are reading that blog and really getting excited. But it's a really short piece. It's only three paragraphs. Why do you think that particular post describing a club that's not even there anymore continues to speak to people?
I have no idea why that's so popular, but I'm amazed. I think the reason why it resonates with so many sailors is because it was there for them, from the, I guess, the 40s up until the mid to late 70s when it finally closed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a necessity because of how the Navy treated sailors back then. You had to wear your uniform off the ship, and these locker clubs helped facilitate kind of a return to normalcy for sailors. And so, it resonates with that group of sailors from that time period.
Well, it's a lovely piece and very poignant, and I'll post the link to it underneath this podcast when I post it. So shifting gears, you've written several wonderful books about growing up, your growing up years. Like the Locker Club piece, why do you think these stories are important to write down and share?
Well, like anything involving history, if you don't write it down, it eventually, if anything, it becomes oral history and loses its accuracy and eventually will disappear. So, you know, by writing it down, you're creating a more or less accurate snapshot of the era. And I don't know, in my case, I'm doing it pretty much just to keep my the experience of my family alive. And that's pretty much it.
Well, you've gotten some great reviews and some great feedback on your books, and I've thoroughly enjoyed all of the ones I've read, especially the one on Karlsruhe. And I wanted to know how you remember all that detail. I mean, I can barely remember what I ate for breakfast, let alone something that happened 50 years ago.
Well, that's a good question. I do have a pretty good memory, which is really, kind of astonishes people that I could remember stuff like that. But my mom and dad both kept notes about their time. Or actually, my dad kept a notebook of his early career, early years in Germany, but then stopped. And my mom sat down and wrote down quite a few notes at their 50th anniversary. So that was a big help to some of this. Also, my dad was an avid photographer, and so we had this thousands of slides of our time in Europe that, you know, was this big visual encyclopedias of what went on all the time we were overseas. And after my dad died, my mom and I called through all the slides and picked out all the ones that we wanted to digitize. And as amazingly, those slides that turned out to be as crisp and clear as they were the day they were taken and when they were digitized.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was going to say my dad and mom did slides too, and it is. They are still crystal clear. I think it's better than the prints.
Really, yeah. But anyway, the other thing is my mom, I think my mom was worried about Alzheimer's or something. Not that she had it or anything, but for years and years, she would tell the stories over and over again, you know. A conversation with her would start with, "Well, you know, Kim, when we lived in such and such a place," and then she'd tell the story about things. This was constantly going on forever and ever. So I kept hearing these stories over and over from her point of view, you know, for years.
It just morphed. Well, my dad kept journals too, and I've been reading some of them. And as you know, he's been writing the history and collecting stories about the overseas school system, which just is celebrating its 75th anniversary this month. And the museum's book, the anthology, Schooling with Uncle Sam, just came out this last week, and you wrote a couple stories for it.
Oh.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that. You don't happen to have any of your stories that you contributed to the anthology that you could read a snippet of, do you?
I have this one about the librarian.
Okay, so just give us a couple of, you know, paragraphs about, what was her name, Mrs. Kowalski?
Yeah, Constance Kowalski.
Okay,
let's see. Another educator at Karlsruhe American High School that I liked was Miss Constance Kowalski, the librarian, 1968. She seems to be the epitome of the stereotypical librarian with horn-rimmed glasses, suits, and a seemingly stern disposition. She did have to warm up to me and my partners in crime, but later she seemed to really enjoy it when Rand G. Kurtz, Jeff Labor, and I came to see her when we were in the eighth grade. I don't know how the nerd patrol ended up in the library so much. We weren't smart nerds, just annoying. Randy, the intellectual of the team, had the best grades of us all, straight C's. My guess was we were probably stalking some eighth grade girls we thought were pretty, like Pat Doyle, Lisa Kuros. At any rate, Miss Kowalski learned that I liked reading and made a big deal of it. I had just started to like reading it. In a moment of extreme boredom one day, I casually pulled The Son of Tarzan off my dad's bookshelf at home. I was thrilled by Edgar Wright's prose and really got sucked into this wonderfully crafted adventure story. After that, I read every book we had at home, including all my sister's Nancy Drew books. At night in bed, I began reading the Encyclopedia Americana from A to B, yet I had not been interested in the library for some reason. Miss Kowalski changed all that by casually challenging me. One day, we were at the library standing at her desk when she said, "You guys are in here so much, why don't you check out a book one of these days?" There were lots of good books over there in the fiction section. I wandered over to the bookshelf and pulled an anthology of science fiction off the shelf, edited by Paul Anderson, and began reading it. I was thrilled. She said in a mock taunt, "I bet you can't read all the A's over there." I grinned and reached for the first book on the A shelf. I put both books on her desk, and she date stamped my card. I read them both in a few days and was back for more. One day soon, I finished the A section and moved on to the B's and C's. Miss Kowalski kept feeding me books like I was a starving man, allowing me to check out more than the number of books allowed. I was in there so much that she set me at the desk and let me check out books when she took a break or ran an errand. Soon the school year was over and I think I was through the D's.
Wow.
Is that enough?
No, that's good. Wow. So did you ever end up reading all of the books in the library?
Well, I got up to the R's and then Dad transferred.
Oh.
never completed that goal, but it was like the first goal I ever had in my life. So I have to thank Ms. Kowalski for that.
Yeah, well, you know, that story of Ms. Kowalski and you know, the other stories you submitted for the anthologies are unlike the other ones. And they help us paint a complete picture of the, you know, the DoD school system. And so I like your unique perspective that you brought to the anthology. So thank you for that. So really quickly, what are the titles of your books that you've written? And can you sum up each of them in a couple of sentences for our listeners so they can see if they want to buy them?
Okay, I'll try to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first one I wrote is The Italian Letter. And it's about my family's adventures in Europe from the day that we landed in Kittingen, Germany, up and through my first 4 years in the Navy. Now, this is my first book, so I think it's a bit on the wrong side in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. Okay. There are some adult stories in there, so it's not really for children. But it took me about 6 years to write, to gather all the information, to put together, loaded with pictures. It's about almost, let's see, I think it's about 475 pages long.
Wow. Wow.
Then I did a book called Millenniums, which is kind of a tongue-in-cheek book about how millennials view us through our idioms. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to write a book explaining idioms to millennials.
Sounds good.
The book, and I realized that if I was a millennial, I'd probably just look it up on my cell phone. So why bother with it? But I enjoyed reading that. I gave your dad a copy of that when I visited.
Okay.
And then I have a couple other children's books I call my Chloe Carlson Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
About a little girl and her brother. I like them. They're my first attempt at that type of fiction.
So
there's two of those. Then
wait,
of course,
Kim, Chloe Carlson.
Chloe Carlson, yeah.
Okay, all right. Go ahead.
Then I just while living in Paul Revere Village, a book about Karlsruhe's in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it I pulled out of the Italian lesson and used that as the basis. But in the Italian lesson, it's only basically a couple pages long. In the newer book, I covered it 250 pages. So it's a very detailed book, complete with maps, pictures, some original art. Most people have really from Karlsruhe area really enjoyed the book.
Well, it helped me. I'll tell you what, because I can't remember. I mean, I lived in Karlsruhe for, I don't know, 16, 17 years. And I can't remember, like, you know, you helped me like remember what the Stars and Stripes bookstore looked like, or like where the snack bar was. So it was a very helpful book for me to reclaim my youthful memories. Thank you, Kim, for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I just went to the reunion, Karlsruhe reunion, a week or two ago, and everybody there was very complimentary too. So
yeah.
I'm glad I did it.
Mm.
And my last book is about my naval. It's kind of an autobiography of me through my naval years. And I entitled that The Naval Adventures of a Dental Sailor. And I don't know. I'm kind of got the writing bug now, and I'm starting to be able to knock these things out a lot quicker than I had before. I'm not sure what my next project will be, but anyway, if you want to buy any of my books or just kind of look at them, they're all on Amazon. Type in my name, Kimball Peterson, and click the book thing, and you should get every book I've ever written.
Okay, so Kimball's K-I-M-B-A-L-L Medders, M-E-D-D-E-R-S?
Perfect, yes.
Okay, on Amazon. Very good. So we need to wrap it up, but what would you like our listeners to know about you or your writing that I didn't ask?
Well, my writing is more for me than for you is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm writing to keep my parents' memory alive or my family's memory alive. And if I can entertain you in the process, more power to it. I once had somebody describe my writing as being raw but honest. I think that's the best compliment anybody's ever given me. So,
Well, I think your writing is very relatable. I do know some of the people in your books, but even if I didn't know somebody in your book, we've all felt awkward. We've all known, you know, people like some of the people you've described. And, you know, so, I mean, the books are relatable and they're entertaining and they're thought provoking, even if we didn't live in your world. So I think that people will enjoy them. And I think raw and honest is an excellent way to, you know, sum them up. So my last question for you, oh, wait, I have something to say before I ask you my last question. So I think maybe your next project ought to be Stuttgart High School, because all your Stuttgart friends are like, huh, why Karlsruhe? Why not Stuttgart? Go Stallions. Okay, now my last question. What makes the bond between Dodd's Dodea teachers and us students so special?
That's a good question. I don't really know the answer to that, other than perhaps the schools were small. Most of the educators made a very big choice to go overseas to teach children. And I think most of them, with a few exceptions, had a very good time teaching us, you know. And there were always odd teachers that got homesick and quit mid-year, and, you know, that, which caused problems. But on the other hand, I think they treated us more like family and friends than they did the students. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm still in touch with my first grade and second grade teachers and, you know, some of my high school teachers. And, you know, that was a long, long, long time ago. So I think that there is a relationship, bonds between us teachers and students, and us students and students, you know, the brats. So it makes perfect sense. So, Kim, thank you. This has been really fun. I've enjoyed the conversation very much.
Well, thanks for having me on your podcast. This is my first one, and sorry about all the problems we had getting connected up. Just put it down to being an old fart.
Well, any rate, I wanted to, well, yeah, and luckily my dog hasn't exploded. They've had so many exciting things go by in our street. We haven't had one dog alarm, so that's good. So thanks to the magic of Zoom and cell phones and, you know, all that, we're connected. But I wanted to remind our listener that the museum's podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brat Seal and Military Brats Registry. And once again, this has been our podcast, Schooling with Uncle Sam. And thank you all for listening.